Welcome to NHL Draft Class. I'm Adam Kimmelman. We are recording this on Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's Day to my co-host, Mike Morial.
Happy Valentine's Day, Adam. I got my Americano coffee this morning because it is the theme of this month, Americano.
Well, it's Hockey Week across America coming up here soon. We're going to have Seth Appert from the USA Hockey National Team Development Program, Jake Sanderson, top prospect from the under-18 team. But you actually saw them in person at the All-American Prospects game.
Yeah, you know, and we've been going to a lot of prospects games, particularly All-American, the CHL. And I got to say, Adam, when I watched Jake Sanderson at this game in January, never have I seen a player dominate a top prospects game as Jake did in that game as a defenseman. I mean, he was all over the ice. He was doing so much, you know, using his stick the proper ways, defending well against quality competition. So I was really impressed with Jake and what he had to offer, so I'm real excited to have him on the show today.
We'll hear from Jake in a little bit, but first, let's welcome in Seth Appert, coach from the USA Hockey National Team Program Under-18 team. Seth, thanks for joining us on NHL Draft Class.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
So, Seth, everybody saw last year's U18 team and how they were basically a rolling all-star team, 8 first-round picks. How is this group that you have this year different and stand out in their own way?
Well, we're different, but doesn't mean we can't be great. That's kind of what we've been telling our guys for a year and a half. This group has been forged through a lot of adversity and quite a bit of failure in the 17 year, and I think we got to gain the experience of watching that 0-1 group, understanding their greatness, but also understanding that that's not us. And our group wins with mean, ornery physical play. We win with great team defense, and we score collectively with physicality, and we score more dirty goals. So we're probably more like the St. Louis Blues or the Boston Bruins than we are like the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Seth, you told me that the more you watch defenseman Jake Sanderson, the more you like him and start to appreciate what his value truly is. That said, is Jake Sanderson to this year's U18 team what Jack Hughes was to last year's?
Absolutely is. He's our guy. He's our rock. He drives our team. He's our captain. He's our best player, and he plays the game the right way. The beauty of Jake is Jake could be considered the best offensive defenseman in this birth year, in this class around the world, but he doesn't cheat the game at all. So what Jake is Jake is a savage defender. He eats up people. He just went a full tournament playing against the best players in the world. He was not on the ice for a goal against, 5-on-5, the whole tournament against the best players. So, and now he produced offense. I think he tied for the tournament lead in scoring. So he scores. He's starting to score a lot, and he still produces a ton of offense for us. But he does it with real minimal risk and without sacrificing the defensive integrity of our team.
Seth, I'm always curious with a player like Jake, whose dad played in the NHL for so long, when you're approaching him, when you're coaching him, does he have more of an innate knowledge of the game, just a higher hockey IQ because of whether it's genetics or just watching his dad play or being around other NHL guys, that maybe guys whose dads had other occupations don't have? You maybe have to explain things once to him and he gets it, whereas another guy whose dad didn't play in the NHL, maybe you have to explain it to him 2 or 3 times?
Yeah, I think that's certainly a possibility. I think I also think it's a little different too with Jake and his dad, Jeff. Like, Jeff played 1,100 some games in the NHL without being a superstar. That's not easy to do. Superstars can play 1,100 games in the NHL without having to do everything the right way. When you're more of a secondary offensive guy like Jeff Sanderson was, to play 1,100 games, you're doing things the right way. You're taking care of your body. You're a good teammate. You're playing both sides of the puck. You're all the things that then get passed down to his son. So not only did he get the experience of growing up in it and being around it and learning that from the locker room, from his dad, from those experiences, but his dad was an unbelievable NHLer without being a superstar. And that's even a more important skills to pass on, because superstar or non-superstar, that's more genetically driven. The habits and the details to your game and to how you live your life, those are things that are more learned. And Jake has certainly learned those things from his dad.
I've been going to a lot of prospects games, Seth. I got to say, you know, that All-American prospects game last month, and Jake, without question, was the most outstanding player on the ice that night. Would it surprise you at all if he weren't selected in the top 10 of this draft?
I'd be shocked if he wasn't picked in the top 10. And we've been saying that for over a year. Mm-hmm. Now his offensive numbers are starting to match that. You know, he just plays the game so efficiently. He defends so hard, so physically. He's the prototypical modern-age defenseman. You know, he's 6'2", he's mobile, he's physical, he can play against other teams' best players, but yet he jumps in the play and can add offense. So, I know there's a lot of good defensemen in this berth here. The Drysdale kid and from Canada is very good. The Mamadoula kid from Russia is very good. You know, there's some real good defenders in this berth here. But I have a hard time believing that there's a defenseman out there from a complete package that's better than Jake Sanderson.
I want to ask you about another player on your team, Thomas Bordoleau. Now, at 5'9", he's obviously not going to stand out physically, but when watching him, it seems like he's able to use that size to his advantage in a way guys maybe his age don't know how to do, where he can get under guys, give them a little pop, and power around them, whereas guys, you know, at 17, 18 years old maybe don't know how to do that. Is that something that you've noticed in Thomas's game that makes him so effective?
Yeah, that's an area of his game that has grown a lot, is the physical parts of his game, both offensively and defensively, the commitment to get inside on people when he has the puck and when they have the puck. That's a part of his game that's grown tremendously here, especially in the 18 year. You know, he has the mind and the stick skill and the cerebral vision to be an elite offensive player. But it's as a centerman, if you don't want to possess the puck when we have it and get it back when they have it, then you're not going to be an elite player in today's game. And he's really grown in that. And I think that this tournament overseas, he took a big step forward. He was one of the best forwards in the tournament. Produced offense, was great defensively, was real good in the faceoff circle. You know, played on the line with Landon Flaggart and Luke Tuck. And what I've liked about Thomas is, when you play with Flaggart and Tuck, you're going to be more of a possession down low line than you're going to be a rush line. That's just the way that those guys are driven, and that's really the way our team's driven. And as Thomas has gained confidence and strength, he's so strong on his skates that he's very, very good down there. It's just a matter of understanding and gaining confidence in how to play that way.
So there are 16 players from the U18s ranked in NHL Central Scouting's midterm list. Six of those players, Seth, of course, are projected to go in the second round. And at the top of that list is right-handed center Dylan Peterson. Tremendous size, 6'4", 192. What makes this kid from California so special?
Well, anytime you're as big as he is and as talented as he is, and now he's starting to understand how to be a power forward. He can play both, but he's been a winger most of this year. He's going to end up being a winger in the NHL. I think everybody comes in here almost as a center, right? That's like in baseball, you draft a bunch of shortstops and center fielders, and then you figure it out from there. So he's the prototypical power winger, right shot, great hands, strong. And as he's learned what it means to be a power forward with skill, when he got here, he was just skilled. He was skilled and he wanted to take guys on one-on-one. Now he's a power forward with skill. And when he plays like a power forward, when he has a physical presence to his game, when he's taking the puck to the net instead of staying on the perimeter, now that size and that athleticism and a reach really starts to become a major factor in his game.
Seth, I want to touch on something you said, or that Mike said actually, about the rankings and how many guys you have that are projected to go in the draft and how big a deal that is. How do you as a coach, because you have almost your entire roster is going to be selected in June or could be selected in June or is on the rankings, how do you make sure that they all stay focused on the game at hand and not worry about the future. And I think Jake Sanderson said, you know, one of the things that, that you said to him was, think about the draft all you want, think about the rankings all you want, don't be worried about it. So how do you handle it with the guys in general?
Well, we handle it by talking about it. You know, I think the worst thing you can do is not talk about it and try to avoid it and try to pretend that it doesn't exist. This is a big year in their life. This is the biggest year in their life to date. We all know as adults, as grown adults, that this isn't the end of the road. This isn't going to define them. They can make it if they're not drafted. They cannot make it if they're first-rounders. But when you're a 17-year-old young man, this is important, and this is what you've been living your life for to this point. So we talk about it, and we talk about the pressures of it. We talk about how to handle the pressures. We talk about how to go through the NHL interviews. We talk about some of the mistakes players in the past have made with being too consumed about it. You know, we just try to educate them on this is part of the process of becoming a world-class player, and you're going to have this attention. You're going to have these distractions. And, you know, one thing we talked about before the prospects game, and I thought our guys passed that test with flying colors that night, is we said there's going to be 300 sets of eyes on you from NHL clubs tonight, but let's be more concerned about the 23 sets of eyes in this locker room. You know, and those are things we talk about. Like, the things that matter are what matters to your teammates. And if you do the right things for the 23 sets of eyes in that locker room with your teammates, usually the 300 sets of eyes out there, they're going to notice as well. So let's not get consumed by what other people think of us. Let's worry about what our teammates think of us and what we need to do for each other.
One of those guys in the rankings is Ty Smolanek, who, like Jake Sanderson, has had a first-round grade. What have you seen from Ty? I know he had a little bit of an injury issue, but since he's been back in the lineup, how has Ty looked? And for maybe people who haven't seen him play, what stands out about his game?
Well, he's an explosive, dynamic skater. I mean, that's the biggest thing that jumps out about you. You know, when you're 6'1", and you have the skating ability that he has, that automatically jumps out at you. And I think that, you know, he has some comparables to Dylan Larkin from a skating standpoint, from a size standpoint, from a body type standpoint. And I think that, you know, Ty's hit a lot of adversity this year, and that adversity is going to be good for him as long as he keeps handling it the right way. And that adversity has been, he had mono at the start of the year, and then he had another injury, and then he's had another injury, and you know, he's missed time, and his season's been disjointed because he hasn't had consistency of games or practice. And now that he's finally fully healthy, you know, what we're really hoping is to have a great 2 months here down the stretch with Ty, and keep rounding his complete game around, because when he plays the game the right way, when he's playing with speed, when he's using that speed both on attack and defensively, there's very few players in this berth here that are as dynamic as he is. And now we're excited about having some consistency with him. And that consistency comes from practice. And it's just been outside of his control this year.
So, Seth, as a former goalie at Ferris State, 92-96, I believe, you probably have a little bit of expertise in the position, what it takes to becoming a good goalie. And you have a pretty decent one there, number two in Central's midterm ranks, in Drew Commesso of Boston, Mass. Is this kid one of the best-kept secrets in the draft, Seth?
It's amazing how little attention he's getting. You know, Spencer Knight, the attention he got, very deservedly so. Spencer Knight was a special goaltender. But Drew Commesso, you can't put up the numbers he's putting up. Now, we're a good defensive team. You know, I'll be the first one to say that. We play good team defense. But you can't be 924 without consistency. And anybody will tell you that one of the hardest things as a young goaltender is consistency. Drew has the size. He's 6'2". He has the athleticism. He has the mindset. And that consistency this year has been extremely impressive. I mean, that is one of the highest save percentages in the history of the program. So think about some of the great goalies that have come through here, and he's right up there with them. And what the best attribute of Drew is that in chaotic moments, whether that's in our international games and college games, when the bench is getting a little squirrely, a little haywire, the guys look down to the net and they see Drew, and he's very calm and he's got everything under control. And that is a very comforting feeling for the bench, seeing that in their goaltender.
you talked about Drew, and maybe he should be getting a little bit more attention. Is there another guy or guys that you think are flying a little bit too far under the radar that maybe they should be getting more attention as we get closer to the draft?
Well, I certainly don't think that that Luke Tuck and Landon Slager get the love that they probably should. What they are, you know, and I understand why the questions get asked, like the questions you guys have asked today about certain players. But you know, from a forward perspective, Luke Tuck and Landon Slager are massive, massive drivers of our team, identity, of winning, of physical play. And those guys, you know, we have a lot of guys. You know, last year's team had 8 first rounders. We have a lot of guys like Tuck and Slager that are going to go somewhere between 20 and 90, but they're going to play in the league for a long time. You know, we might have more guys that play in the league than the 01s. We won't have as many high picks as the 01s. Maybe not as many superstars as the 01s. And I think Tuck and Slager fit into that bill. And then from a defenseman standpoint, you know, we certainly get asked about Sanderson and Clevin all the time. But I think a guy like Brock Faber really flies under the radar. Brock Faber is one of the best defenders in this first year anywhere in the world. He doesn't produce the offensive numbers that some of the other guys have. But from a defensive standpoint, we project him to be like a Charlie McAvoy, like a top-pairing defensive group player in the National Hockey League. And those guys are real drivers of how we win as a team.
This month, of course, Seth, we celebrate Hockey Week across America, February 22nd. We all remember, you know, the U.S. with the big miracle victory there against the Soviets in Lake Placid, New York. I'm curious, Seth, how did the miracle inspire you, if it did at all? And are there any players that you admired growing up as a kid?
Oh, it was a massive influence in my life. I have that picture hanging in my bedroom. I have it still with me in my office. I've had it throughout my coaching and playing career. I was 5 years old. I listened on the radio because it was taped away, and I watched it that night. I went out with my older brother and my dad and mimicked in that game in the driveway in the ponds in Minnesota the next 2 days, and then got out of the outdoor rink as quickly as possible Sunday morning to get home in time to watch them beat Finland to win the gold medal. So I remember those are some of my earliest memories. You know, Neil Broughton would have been my guy. He's a Minnesota guy, played for the Gophers, played for the North Stars. For me, Neil Broughton was the guy on that team that I idolized, and he was my favorite player as a little guy growing up. So that was a major, major influence on my life. That's funny. We've just talked about us talking about the John Van Beesbrook the other day, and you know, they called the Miracle on Ice, and it was an incredible moment. But you know, I'm not so sure it was a miracle. It was calculated. It was planned. There was a method to it by Herb Brooks, you know, one of the greatest American coaches. And that was a heck of a hockey team that the Americans had. I mean, look at the professional careers, the NHL careers that a lot of those guys put together. It was a miracle that because nobody knew about who we were at the time. But when you look at the coaching job that Herb Brooks did and the amount of players that went on to outstanding NHL careers, that was a heck of a hockey team that beat the Soviets that day.
Thank you very much, Seth. Appreciate you joining us on NHL Draft Class.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Seth Appert, great stuff. Mike, what really stood out to me is when he talked about the rankings and how he handles that, what can be a really difficult situation. You know, he said, just name it and claim it. Talk about it and take ownership of it and let the guys know it's okay to think about it, but don't dwell on it. Don't let it affect your play.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you would expect in a coach of that caliber on a team, coaching a team of all-stars, basically. Let's face it, Adam, right? These guys, wherever they come from high school or wherever, they're all-stars on their team. So to collectively bring them together and work with them and, you know, tell them they may be a bottom six forward or, you know, a bottom two D pair, and they're willing to do that, work hard, and eventually get drafted, as we've seen these last couple of years.
But I think what's different there is, you know, you're covering a team in the CHL. You might have three guys who are going to be drafted, who are prime guys, who are highly ranked guys, maybe four guys. He's got 17, 18 of them. I mean, if you count the couple of kids from the underagers that come up. But he's got 18 kids that are all reading these rankings, all following the message boards and the stuff that we do and the stuff that other people do when they talk about the rankings it can be pretty stressful, but I think the way you defuse that, I like the way he does it, just get it all out there. Just let everybody talk about it and name it and claim it and take the air out of the balloon.
Yeah, absolutely. I, you know, I liked his response, too, on Ty Smolanic. I know Ty is ranked number 18 in Central Scouting's midterm report. He's been beset by injuries all season long, it seems, Adam. The kid can't get out of the injury bug. You know, missed 10 games with mononucleosis, a sprained ankle. He was in a cast at the All-American Prospects game on his hand, but still played in the game and played very well. And as Seth mentioned to us, extremely fast and nimble. Once he gets into the zone, he's like a mucker, a grinder as well. So you're looking at a top-end forward who could play that middle six role for any NHL team in a few years. I like what he brings. He's going to Quinnipiac next year, so he'll continue his his development in college, and he'll learn there, and he'll grow, and he'll become an even better player.
Smolanic to Quinnipiac. You're going to practice that between now and the draft, right?
I think I did pretty good with it. So.
You tried. Yeah. When he compared him to Dylan Larkin, that's what caught my ears and piqued my interest is, you know, we know what Dylan Larkin can do. He's an all-star. He's one of the fastest, if not the fastest skater in the league, Connor McDavid, you know, notwithstanding. If you're getting compared, if you're getting put in that light, that says a lot about your pro potential. And like you said, middle six forward, maybe a top six guy. He's going to be interesting for a lot of teams as we get forward here to the draft.
Absolutely, Adam. You know, he is the highest ranked forward on the NTTP this season. So a lot of it is expected of him. And the fact that NHL Central Scouting still has him ranked that high as a first-round projection, despite all the injuries he has, says a lot about his character and the kind of player he is.
Well, now let's bring in the highest-ranked defenseman and the highest-ranked American player on the list, Jake Sanderson. Jake, thanks for joining us on NHL Draft Class.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
So, Jake, tell us a little bit about life in Whitefish, Montana. What did you do there as a youngster? Obviously, your dad was a professional hockey player, but what did you do, for fun? Was it hockey 24/7? Was it a lot of work on the farms? What was it like?
Yeah, so obviously, to start off, I was born there in the summertime. As long as my older brother, we were both born there. And I don't know, I guess it was kind of like a little hideaway spot for my dad during or in between seasons. And I wouldn't say we do hockey 24/7 when I was living there. There's a lot of other stuff to do. Like in the summer, we would go fishing. And in the winter, we'd do a lot of skiing.
Jake, late in your career, dad had a few stops: Columbus, Philly, Phoenix, Edmonton, Vancouver. You know, you get kind of the lucky stuff. You get to go in the locker room. You get to meet the players. Do you have any memories growing up going into NHL locker rooms or getting to go out after practice with any NHL guys that were playing with your dad?
I have, like, it's very faint memories just because I was, like, super young and it was kind of like the latter half of his career. But I remember going into the Edmonton Oilers, going into their locker room, and I remember living in Phoenix and Philadelphia for a bit. So, yeah.
So, Seth, you played defense, but your dad was a forward. What gives?
Yeah, when I was younger, it was probably, like, around my Bantam age, I was, like, I'd kind of go back and forth between forward and defense. But at the time, it was, like, the next year I had to make a decision because I had to try out. So I kind of, like, I chose defense because at the time I was pretty good at skating backwards and I had really good patience with the puck when I was younger.
Now, regardless of the difference in positions, though, do you see any similarities in your game and your dad's game when you watch him on video?
Yeah, I think I get my skating from him because he was a speedster out there, so I think we're both pretty good, pretty strong skaters.
Jake, what do you feel it takes to becoming an NHL defenseman today?
I think you got to be mobile. I think the game's changing. There still is a lot of those big, strong defensemen, but if you look at like a guy like Quinn Hughes or Cale Makar, they can dance at the blue line and stuff, and they can also, you know, play that strong game. So I think having a mixture of the strength and the mobility is good.
So, Jake, I know you were born in Montana, but you spent a lot of time growing up in Calgary. You went to high school out there. Why did you choose to come to the national team program, play for USA Hockey? You could have stayed out west. You could have played in the WHL. I know Kootenay, now Winnipeg, has your rights. Can you take us through what your decision-making process was to pick the NTTP over going to the Western Hockey League?
Yeah, the WHL is very heavy out there in Western Canada, so it was definitely in the back of my mind when I was younger. I really wanted to go, but my dad said, you know, just wait a bit longer, see what other options we have. And my parents always wanted me to go to college, so college hockey was in the back of my mind when I was younger too. But then I think it was after I committed to North Dakota, I don't know if that was like my ninth grade year, I got, I don't know if it was like an email or something, but to come like visit the program, the NTDP, and then a couple months later there was a tryout. So I was kind of like blindsided at that tryout, wasn't really sure what to expect, but you know, this program's second to none, just the professionalism and stuff, the coaching and all the facilities we have, you know, to get to the next level.
I know Nick Ford does a lot of the defensive coaching for the NTDP. What has Nick been able to bring? And in addition to Nick, Seth Appert, you know, the head coach at the NTDP, has done a fabulous job with that group. But what can you say about the coaching staff there?
Oh, yeah, the coaching staff is unreal here. I love going on the ice and seeing them in the weight room every single day. But I think, like I said before, just the professionalism they have here, it's like no other junior team.
The Central Scouting Rankings came out about a month ago. Obviously, either you've seen them by now or someone has told you where you are in the rankings. I'm curious, you know, because your team's a little bit different because everybody there, just about everybody there, is draft eligible. Is it a point of conversation in the locker room? Do you guys talk about it, or is it just sort of, you know, kind of just ignored and guys just go about their business?
I don't know. I guess you could say at the start there was a couple like stirrings and whispering about the list, but not. We don't really talk about it at all. We just kind of go on with our day and focus on the games instead of like the list and what other people think about us.
It's easy to say that when you're the highest ranked guy on the team, though, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really look at that stuff. So
Jake, when I'm looking at the stats from the U17 season, your U17 season, and then this year, the one thing that kind of stuck out to me, and I don't pay too much attention to plus minus rankings all too often. But for defensemen, I just, every so often, I'll take a look at it. Last year, you were minus 20 for the U17s, and this year, a plus 16. Is there any rhyme or reason for the big uptake there?
I guess probably just maturity. And, like, last year, we were playing in the USHL, and our team kind of, like, struggled a bit last year, and we had to face a lot of adversity. So I guess you could say I was on for a lot of goals that year. But I think this year, just also our team, our whole team has grown, so that's kind of helps, I guess, my stats and everybody else's stats.
And speaking of stats, have you set goals for yourself as far as a number of goals, a number of points, or just something in general team-wise that you want to accomplish?
Personally, not really me. Obviously, I wanted to change the plus-minus because it was not really up to my standards last year, so I think I've changed that definitely this year, but not like really goals or anything. But, I don't know, just more focus on, like, the team goals and stuff and, like, winning tournaments and focusing on Worlds in a couple months.
I know Worlds is the big be-all, end-all for you guys at the program, but beyond that is the draft in Montreal in June. How hard is it to kind of backburner that, even though it's something that, you know, you guys kind of strive for and look forward to? I mean, probably since you're a little kid, you thought about being drafted by an NHL team. Now you're in that year. How hard is it to not kind of not think about that, or at least kind of push it to the back?
Yeah, like you said, we always want to get drafted when we're younger, and it's been a goal of mine my entire life, so I've been working toward that my entire life. But I don't know. I think just obviously you think about it and stuff, but, you know, Coach Appert told me, it's a good thing he told me, was you can think about it as much as you want, but you can't worry about it as much as you want. So I think that's a really big difference. Like, I think about it every single day. Every single day I wake up, it's my motivation, and winning for my team is my motivation. So,
all right. So speaking of the draft, I asked a couple of the guys on the team last year what their answer to this would be. But draft's coming up. You could take one teammate with you to whatever NHL team drafts you. Who would you take from your team?
Man, I'd take all of them if I could, but probably. maybe Thomas Bortolo, just because me and him talk about, like, the draft and a lot of, like, we talk about the NHL all the time. And I personally know that he really wants to play in the NHL just as bad as I do. Yeah, probably Thomas.
So, Jake, how many brothers and sisters do you have, if any, and how much of an influence were they?
Yeah, I have two brothers. One's 19 and the other one's 14. And they're my best friends. I don't get to see them a lot these days because we're both away playing hockey. But when I do, I try to spend as much time as I can. Like, I was at I went back home to Calgary in Christmas, and I was with them every second. And in the summer and stuff, we always hang out too.
So the one older brother there, that's Ben?
Yeah.
That's Ben. Is he at Colorado College, or is he going to attend Colorado College?
He's playing in the BCHL right now for the Vernon Vipers.
Okay. And did you and Ben do a lot of things on the farm in Montana? Is you guys bale hay? What'd you do over there?
Yeah, I guess you could say we bale some hay. We do a lot of outdoor training, like mountain biking and stuff. And it's like all the guys in my family, my dad and also my little brother, we go like mountain biking every morning, and we do a lot of like fishing and stuff.
Jake, speaking of your dad, obviously he played in the NHL. You want to get there. Did he coach you at all growing up, or was he sort of a hands-off guy? And maybe what was some of the best advice he's given you as far as, you know, being a hockey player and potentially getting to the NHL?
Yeah, he coached me he tried to coach me every single year when I was younger, but sometimes he couldn't. But, I guess you could say he was hands-on when I was younger, but now since I'm away from home, I guess you could say he's a little less hands-off, but he still texts me and stuff, and we still talk about, I don't know, games and how everything's going and stuff. And for advice, I don't know. I think he just, I don't know, he kind of just lets me figure it out for myself. But he likes, in the summer and stuff, we do a lot of, like, training and stuff with him. So
I know you mentioned earlier, Jake, Quinn Hughes, you mentioned some defensemen there. I know that you're also a pretty big fan of Miro Heiskanen. Drew Doughty, those guys. What do you like about their games?
Yeah, I like watching Miro Heiskanen right now, just because he's a young like kind of coming up star defenseman right now, and I think I see similarities between our games, just because like kind of like both the way we're built and stuff, longer, lengthier guys, and kind of have that long stride. It's pretty strong, and we're both like he's an unreal two-way defenseman. I love watching him.
So Jake, it's Hockey Week across America coming up here. Do you have a favorite USA Hockey related moment, either from playing yourself or just from watching on TV growing up?
Honestly, I don't really. Usually probably my favorite USA Hockey moment is just coming to the rink every day and hanging with these guys.
Jake Sanderson, good stuff. Mike, what stood out to you about from the things we learned about Jake today?
Well, you know what? He's you know, a player that obviously a lot of teams are going to covet here. I like the fact that, you know, earlier Seth even said that he expects him to go top 10. I would imagine, you know, Jake would hope to go top 10 in this draft. I think he has a great opportunity to do that. One of the things that really struck me when I was talking to Nick Foer, who's the defensive coach for the U.S. NTDP, he told me that, and he's the longest tenured member of the coaching staff there. He told me that he's worked with many great defensemen at the program, of course. Seth Jones, Zach Werenski, Noah Hanifin, Charlie McAvoy. And he told me that he believes Sanderson is among that elite group, Adam. So that says a lot about a player coming through this, you know, coming through the program, the U-17s. And as we said, you know, that was something he wanted to work on, that plus minus. And he goes from a minus 20 to a plus 16 this season. The kid's doing something right.
Yeah, well, we all know those guys you mentioned. If he's in the class of a Jones, a McAvoy, a Werenski, yep, that's putting him in pretty good stead for somebody's going to get him high up in the draft, whether it's top 10, top 15. That's one of the great mysteries we'll unravel as we get closer to June.
Absolutely, Adam.
So before we sign off, I want to make mention of a friend that we lost, a colleague, John McGurdy, who passed away on the 7th last Friday. John covered the draft with Mike and myself early on. The first 2-3 years, he'd come up to the Combine with us, and I'll never forget sitting in the Westin Hotel where the Combine used to be, and there's John on the couch. We all had our prospects to talk to. All had our stories to write, and there's John sitting in the middle of this long couch with two guys on his left and two guys on his right, and he's got four interviews done at the same time, balls in the air like a circus juggler. I don't know how he did it, but he kept all the interviews straight, all the voices straight. It was one of the damnedest things I've ever seen. John was easily the most unique guy I've gotten to work with. You know, I worked with him at a newspaper job before I came to the NHL. His desk was right next to mine for the time we worked at the league together. Went to John's funeral last week. It was a very difficult day, a long day, but definitely one of the real characters that you come across in the business. I used to say about John, if you need Gordie Howe's bantam coach's phone number, John had it.
Yeah, fantastic colleague. And reminiscing on those stories, Adam, I recall coming down. I used to, you know, we used to work the elevators to get to the floors of where the prospects used to be waiting for teams. And John would be the guy sitting on the couch in the lobby, just kind of lounging out. And I remember a few times, you know, coming back down, you know, I'm sweating, you know, I had to get something to eat, another cup of coffee or something. And I walked into the lobby and there's McGurdy on the couch, you know, kind of lounging out. I was like, John, you getting anybody? He's like, yeah. He goes, I got 15 guys already. How many did you get? And I was like, well, yeah, I got 3 or 4, but I've been doing the elevator thing. And he's like, nah. He goes, every time I see a young kid come by, I say, are you a prospect? They said, yeah. I said, come on down. I'll write a story about you. So that was John McGurdy. We lost a really, really good friend, colleague, and, you know, he'll forever be remembered.
Yeah, there'll never be a loss for stories about John McGurdy. Some we can tell on the podcast, some we'll share for other times. But that's going to do it for us here at NHL Draft Class. Subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. And a reminder to check out some of the other great shows on the NHL Podcast Network. If you like our show, please subscribe, leave a 5-star review. We'd really appreciate that. For Mike Morial.
Always a pleasure.
I'm Adam Kimmelman. Thank you again for listening. And until next time, NHL Draft Class is dismissed.